Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and welcome to the Regiment with me, Ben, and him.
Yeah, Phil Mealy to the regiment. What can I say?
How are we doing, Phil?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah, not too bad. I'm at my mum and dad's at the minute. If you see somebody limping past with a load of frozen food, you know that the Asda delivery's been, but I've told him not to come in, so you never know.
You never know. I thought you were going to say something different there, Phil. If you see someone walking past in their pants or something like that.
Yeah.
And to the listeners, we finally met in real life last week.
Yeah, I was up in Newcastle, which was fantastic. You took me to a really beautiful pub where they just put some fresh sawdust down. They emptied the spittoons, and we had a nice night, didn't we?
It was good.
Yeah. All good.
Excellent. Well, this week, as people know from the title of this episode, we have another special guest. And I struggled again, Phil. It was easy with Lorraine as the heart, and Susan as the 66 squad, which people will hear soon. Is our guest today the villain or the outsider of the piece, being that they're always in the back room? How would you describe it?
I don't think the villains. I think they're just they could almost be a sketch on their own, the cops. Because, I just think that they're the likeness, aren't they, with the police, you know what I mean? And they are, they bring a lot of the comedy to it. I don't know, there's a lot of comedy in there, but they're just great characters.
Yeah. I will say, that was not a go at the police. I'm just saying, police are not the villains. I'll get that in now before I get any letters.
Don't worry. You know, your car's marked anyway, mate. When you
exactly.
Get
But welcome to the regiment, James Quinn.
Hi, Phil.
All right, James.
All right, good to see you again.
Yeah, and you, pal. All good.
Yeah.
Happy days.
Yep. So thank you for joining us, James. And how are you today?
Very well, yeah, very well. Just had to go to fix my auntie's heating system, though. So, you know, that's my 95-year-old aunt who's, but these things you have to do, don't you?
Mm-hmm. So you see, he's not a real copper, you know what I mean? For all those people out there who thought he was and it was a documentary, no. Actually a part-time plumber.
So how did Early Doors come about or come on your radar when it came to the finding out about it, the audition phase? Like, what was the introduction to it for you?
Well, it's kind of one of those really happy stories for an actor. It was, I came home from the shops. I was unemployed. I came home from the shops on Tuesday, and there was a script pushed through the store, you know, before this year's, before email became really prevalent. Mm-hmm. And it was lunchtime, and I rang my agent and said, oh, yeah, I was going to ring you. It's this thing, Early Doors. And so I went for the audition the next day and didn't hear. This gets a bit Craig David now. I got the script on Tuesday, went for the audition on Wednesday, didn't hear a thing on Thursday, got offered on Friday, started the job on Monday. I think, Phil might correct me, is that I think I was the last person to be cast. If not, then somebody was cast very late. And it was a straightforward audition, just played it naturally, and then I got it, and I was so pleased. And you know, just met Craig for the first time that Monday, and Phil, obviously, and Peter, who played the other cop, and everyone else.
Yeah.
And we got very drunk, and they gave us a night in the V&A across the road, where Maxine Peake famously tried to... I saw Maxine the other day, she remembered this, that they'd stopped serving, and so Maxine climbs over the... bar, pulls the thing, and it goes beep, and the fella comes rushing around. But so that's how. So I knew nothing about it until I got the audition. I know some people were cast like ages before me. It was I was out of work, and then suddenly I had a job, and a nice job. So
it's strange, really, because Peter was one of the first ones to get on board with it. And it's because originally it was going to go and then it didn't. So Peter came in. This is when we were in Soho Square in London, and we were down there. And Peter came in to read for it. And he was one of the first people that had seen the script. And it was really encouraging to us because he just kept laughing all the time. And he's quite he's a seasoned actor, isn't he, Peter? And he was like, well, I'm really sorry. This is very unprofessional of me. But he just kept laughing. So we were like, oh, this is great then. It was like, oh, yeah, well, it must be funny then. Unless
and then I came in with a totally stony face.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and said, this is supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah, we were like, that. We knew his reputation of being stony faced, so we thought, well, we'll leave him till last so he doesn't bring a downer on the whole project. Yeah, no, yeah, so that was that. I mean, to be honest, now, I'm sure you know this, I think, but there was somebody, we're not cast, but we had somebody in mind for it, and they, I think they were offered, but they started messing us about, so we thought, oh, bollocks, son.
Was that quite last minute then?
Yeah, that's why it was last minute, because and they just kept messing about, and we just said, oh, you know what? Tell them, and now, you know, you can't imagine the cops in any other. Genuinely, can you though? You know, it's just one of those brilliant things. And you and Pete were just like fantastic together as well. You know what I mean? The kind of, because you know what the difficulty I think with which would have been for the two copies is for them to have been like a two-headed monster, really. Do you know both the sort of slip into being almost like the same character, but they are clearly defined. You know what I mean? You can tell that like Peter's got the more sort of senior, the two, and he sort of pulls rank every now and again. But
I love some of my favorite lines are Nigel's lines. The subtle things like we'll see if we can beat the plain clothes boys to the biscuit tin.
Yeah.
I've got 5 minutes in this game.
Okay. Yeah.
No answer line.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about the cops writing for the cops is that you can, I mean, on Early Doors, I mean, you've got to push the envelope a little bit, but we try not to go too big. But with the cops, I think we took liberties a bit more because I think people are ready to believe that the doing kids' parties in helicopters, which is obviously complete nonsense. But I think there's an element where Joe Public, because they sort of think the police are, you know, on the whole a bit useless and, you know, they're always up to something. I think we could just, you know, push the envelope a little bit with it.
And you know that, particularly from the live show, the number of police officers.
Oh, yeah.
Came to see that show and chatted to us. And almost to a person, said, "Yeah, we knew a couple of coppers."
Yeah, they
like that. I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but they were the characters that were based upon two particular police officers. Is that right?
That's right, and that's the kind of really bizarre thing is that everybody else in there. I mean, they're all got little sort of, you know, character traits of people that you know. That's why people, oh, he reminds me of such and such. But with the cops, they were actually real. Phil and Nige are real people who used to go into Three Crowns, who would drink in the little room at the back and then put all the coats on and come out and watch the football.
And of course, they would, I know, of course, speak to a few policemen who say it will justify that style of policing. Say, it was intelligence. You know, this is how you gained intelligence.
Yeah.
Went to the pub. I've no doubt there is some truth in that. But
yeah.
I don't think that was the... That was the be all and the end all of.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, let's go.
Back of a pub.
Yeah, let's go for a few pints of intelligence, shall we? But yeah, I think that, and particularly, good, I think, as well, or it's really enjoyable, was to see the dynamics of between them and Ken, because Ken's personality would change when the cops turned up. Because, of course, when he's behind the bar, he's the man. He's got the, you know, he's the one with the platform there. And he's, you know, when he gets in with the cops, he's subservient. He's in there and he has to, you know, to play that role. So that was really nice to see. And it was great how it would change really quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah,
I love that in sitcom where, you know, because a lot of times in sitcom, you see, people just remain that character all the time. So they speak to people the same way. Yeah, and that just isn't true in life, is it? Everybody speaks to everybody differently, depending on where they see themselves in the pecking order. Okay. So I love that about the way that Kent was always like toady into the cops. Just really
Were they always, when you had the idea, were they were always going to be two cops? Or was that something you added as you developed?
Yeah, because... Again, I think it was just that thing that, again, basically because of the experience, seeing those two, and you just think, you know, you've got to have one in, there's got to be an accomplice too. So when they're talking about what they've been up to, you know, the other one back him up, or the other one said, well, you know, the thing, you just need that other witness to it, I think. Yeah. And they work as great foils. I mean, I used to love all the stuff when, like you talk about when your wife had left you and all that.
Yeah.
It's great.
I'd forgotten that when I watched when it came out on the iPlayer this year. There were certain bits I didn't remember, and that's a rather dark element.
Yeah.
Of Phil.
Yeah.
Very good.
I loved all that when he's like, you know, it's don't talk to him. You know, it's great because he could. So, either of you could go, oh, well, don't talk to him about divorce. Well, what do you mean? And then, of course, it's not something you would volunteer, but in, you know, the introduction's in it. I love all that about, you know, giving me the V's in my own car. The kids, this was in the back seat. It's getting petty now. Oh, well, he does, don't. No. Anyway, I'm getting one of the lads to snap her aerial off tomorrow, letting the tyres down on Thursday.
The part to those characters to be a part of a brilliant sort of comedy. We were blessed to get those parts. And partly it's a lot to do with, you can think of who are the worst people to be something. So like you could say to say Dad's Army, some of those characters, who would you last want to be defending the last line of defense against the Germans, you know?
Yeah.
I think that there's an element with Phil and Nige, which is that the comedy that flows from that.
Yeah.
And that, you let it rip a bit, the things they did. That's part of the absolute joy of it.
And the great thing about it as well is that they are aware, you know, I mean, the line when, I mean, that's in the first series, I think, which, you know, it said, oh, somebody's was running down the drive. Can't remember, is his sister or something, or somebody's driving to pinch the cassette radio. And he's like, well, did she report it? And he's like, well, what's the use? You
know? Yeah.
It's just like, so even they, like, you know, I mean, you know, we won't catch anybody. That's, you know, the CI, they'll write a few things down, but we'll end up lobbing it in the bin. That's if they've not nicked the bin as well. It's all, it's just, you know.
And then the when those little updates in the live show of thing now, Ken, they want evidence.
Yeah.
All this evidence. Thing about evidence. That's the buzzword now.
Yeah.
Buzzword.
Oh, yeah. But it is, I do think that, sorry, like with the coppers, it is that thing. You can almost say that they were up to anything, really. And we did. Yeah, you know, somebody had pretended to be in a wheelchair and they got me through to the football and things like that. And the viewers are just going, yeah, I bet they've done that. I'll bet that's the kind of thing they would do, you know. Mm. But, it's really good.
I think the balance with that as well was important because, like Ken, with these pinching the money off the, called? The
charity pile. Yeah.
All the stuff the cops did was never too serious. It was always just a little bit.
Beating someone up in the back of a van. It was none of that.
Yeah, it was none of that.
Fitting someone up.
Yeah. Like dodgy DVDs. Yeah, it's not right. But like anyone.
Yeah. And it's all that thing of, well, you've probably had it coming to him anyway, Ken. You know, it's like, you know, they were kind of that old fashioned, you know, which you kind of hear about, don't you? Where, you know, oh well, you just get a clip around the ear or from the local bobby, you know. So it's like when there was a crime, you know, that when we did the live show, is that, you know, there'd be a crime and we'd choose a criminal and we'd put the two together, you know, because, you know, you think, well, they must have done some, they'll have done something like that. So,
so
that justifies it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was, and then it was nice that at the end of the first series when we went out, we got to sort of be with the rest of them, you know.
Yeah.
The part of the mad party at the end, end of the second series.
Yeah.
And of course, famously congering around the studio all in one go.
I know, yeah. Do you know what? The amount of people, it's like, it's great how that's done.
Yeah.
And you just think, and all we did was, you know, because I think somehow, you know, is it a stop-start camera which costs obviously thousands, I think. You know, so when we panned from the day back to the night and it was just the camera going one way, the lights going dark and us running around the other way, trying to dishevel ourselves as we went and then coming in through the back door. Mm-hmm. That's what great acting is, you see, the way we all came in drunk.
That is so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I was so pleased to run the workshop. Peter White is just such an accomplished actor. He's always working. He's often doing massive theatre, major theatre stuff, as well as big TV series. But he's I've said this quite often, can't be doing with him because everyone loves him so much. It's like, every time you mention his name, it's like, isn't he? Oh, Peter.
Yeah.
What a good actor. It's like, No, he is, though.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's great. And he'd like to say, but he loved, I mean, I'd say he loved the early doors. Well, I guess he gets recognised for that. I mean, I know he's done so much stuff, but I know he said, I'm always getting, you know, crime can't crack itself and all that. Mm-hmm. Because, it's just that thing. And it's really, it's strange, isn't it, James? I think it's kind of, you know, as time goes on, it just doesn't wane. The popularity of it doesn't wane, does it? In fact, it's the opposite, I think. More people find it. It's just because, you know, it was hidden away at the start. And as time's gone on, it's just become more and more and more popular. I don't know.
It's someone more eloquent than I said it. A classic is an endlessly repeatable experience. And that is the case when you watch Early Doors, because there's so many. And honestly, I know this is, you know, bigging up ourselves in a way, but this is what people say, is that they watch it over and over.
They watch it.
Also, people will be told, there's a group I'm involved in, a FC United Sporting Memories, who you're wonderfully going to come and speak to, and they a lot of them are big Early Doors fans, and one of them hadn't seen it but finally got given the DVDs last week and watched the whole 12.
Yeah.
Off. And people say, you know, it's I remember an old guy saying at that group when someone else from the company was talking about how it's just, they just say it's, they're people we know. It's just life, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. I think that's the difficulty with comedy, with a lot of comedy really, is that a lot of times the joy of what like Early Doors and the Royal Family maybe, and any, well, good comedies really, Porridge or whatever it is. I'm not comparing it to those, not Porridge, which is amazing, but or Fools and Horses, is that there are sort of people, you know, you can identify with a lot of the characters in there. I think with Early Doors, generally in there, even if you don't go, it doesn't have to be about a pub, you see. I mean, it is about a pub, but it could have been in a cafe, it could have been in a, just where you get a collection of people. But those characters, you do recognise, everybody knows, like a miserable old sod, it's me these days. but that, you know, or, you know, somebody's sort of walking the line that's just this side of it, like the cops, or like Ken, or, you know, the Winnie and Jean upstairs, you know, kind of pulling the strings on all that business. It's just everybody knows those people or knows somebody like them or recognizes the characteristics. I think a lot of, and I don't understand, I mean, a lot of comedy that you see on telly, I think that's where they miss a trick, really. That a lot of the time, it's either too big and you just think, well, I don't believe that. I don't recognize that situation. And I don't, you know, it's not something, you don't even have to have been in that situation, but you should recognize some of the character traits, really. Yeah.
The thing is, though, it raises the question about television comedy, and there's a lot of good stuff, but it tends to be, and this has been the case for a good few years now, stuff that's, certainly well after the watershed, it tends to be not aimed at, the One Nation sitcom. And you talked about Porridge.
Yeah.
The guys who wrote that, who also wrote my favourite of the old sitcom, which is called Whatever Happened to the Likely Lads.
Yeah, yeah.
Two young men, one of whom was conforming, he was settling down, he was getting married, he was getting into wine, he was getting a house. And his mate, Terry, that's Bob Rodney Buse, and then Terry... Yeah. Who was demobbed, and he wasn't having that. And it was at the time, it was so relevant. I was obviously very, very young, but it was very relevant about that exactly was happening. We had a mate called Paul England and his mum and dad were perfume salespeople, and they had a Range Rover and another car.
Right, yeah.
We didn't have a car or a phone. There was a lot of talk about materialism, you know, about whether things, you know, whether this thing about wanting things, was it the right thing? And that really came up. And that was on at like, 8 o'clock. It was totally approachable, but it was about something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Combination. And I think that Early Doors, it also comes from more from that tradition, even though it was post-watershed, it was quite grown up. So it wasn't a family thing as such, but it's something that reaches a working class audience alongside, in a way that I would say something that I really like The Office.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Probably, I don't know how much that reaches everyone. I mean, those sitcoms written by two great Northeast writers. Who were they?
Clement and Lafrenet.
Clement and Lafrenet, yeah.
Yeah.
The Porridge, I remember. One thing I might remember Porridge was it was about the only sitcom I remember that really hit the ground running from the first episode.
Yeah.
Many great things like Only Fools and Horses, Dad's Army, they took a couple of series to sort of settle into the consciousness.
Yeah. And
possibly because Ronnie Barker was huge. Two Ronnies was huge. They'd done Lightly Lads. They had the complete package, which people just got into straight away.
Yeah. And perfect casting. I mean, the thing is, we talked about this, is that like casting of these things is like absolutely, it's critical. You can just get the wrong person in. It's just like, oh, you know what I mean? And it can upset the whole balance of it. So like in, you know, like with those, like with the number of on with Early Doors, you know, there's a kind of style that everybody adopts where it isn't too slapsticky or isn't too big. Nobody's thought of trying to push the head above the parapet, really. It's quite, you know, a lot of them just let the character and the comedy do the work. And it's just, and rather than...
Yeah.
For instance, like the old Tommy, I mean, I suppose it's one of the famous scenes in it where old Tommy does the lollipop thing. Well, you know, he's talking about, you know, everybody listening, if they're interested, will remember that scene when, you know, I don't like them. If anyone comes, any of them come talk to me now, it's time I'll piss off and the lollipop comes up. Nobody reacts to that. In the pub, nobody reacts to that. Everyone goes, right, okay, Tommy, see you later. Nobody rolls their eyes and goes, you know, it's just that thing, what just makes it funny is like, you know, everybody in there, he's just, of course we know what he does. He just, that's the way he is.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It just makes it funnier.
Yeah. So, I mean, it actually leads into the question about soaps, doesn't it? You know, the way that in the old, and again, we're getting a bit rose-coloured, but, you know, the days when it was, say, the Ogdens or whatever, and it was very much about character and falling out and stuff. And now, you know, obviously because of the drive to try and hang on to ratings, there's the desire to have big set piece weeks where something really, really bad happens. And if there's a wedding, you know somebody's going to die. Wedding is going wrong. I think I think, you know, in a way that's also not dissimilar in that it's got to have an effect, it's got an impact. I think we were talking before we started about people just do nothing, which is about two lads with their own radio station corrupted.
Yes, it's brilliant. Yeah,
in their flat, and that though is almost kind of fly on the wall. So
yeah.
I think you go back to basics, and it shows you that you just need characters and story, that we don't need an awful lot of glamour to get there.
But and that's the thing, and I don't understand, you know, I'm not sure why it isn't clear, because, I mean, I think it's just fairly logical, really, in so much as that, like with that People Just Do Nothing, or with The Office, or Coronation Street when it was great, or Royal Family, whatever. It is about wanting to spend time with those people.
Yes,
Early Doors, it's not like it's, you know, there was no, you know, there wasn't a car coming through the window of the grapes, or, you know, some great dramatic, you know, somebody's been shot. It's just the fact that you're, for half an hour, you're in the company of people and you're enjoying that company. And it's almost, there's a narrative going through it, but it's not a really, you know, it's not a complex narrative at all. And anyway, that serves the comedy better, because you're not having to serve the storyline. You can think, okay, well, let's just have them talking about this. Let's have them talking about organic veg, or let's have them talk about Joe having a dinner party, or let's have the cops talking about, well, you know, how did you go on? When you turned up, when the comic was raided, was there much taken? Well, not till we got there. It's kind of that thing where, but it's like in everyday life, really. If you're not liking the characters, you don't hang around with them. I think it's as simple as that. If you like somebody's company, that's why you're in their company. If you, and television is that, and you know, entertainment or sitcom or it is, or like a soap is the extension of that. It's about, you know, liking being there for half an hour. That's what loads of people say. Oh, I'd love to go. They want to know where the pub is. They want to be in that pub.
And people think it's real, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
All fact, sorts of stories about it was filmed in this pub in such and such and all that. And it's always to break it to them that it was this wonderful set.
I've got a better one than that. So the Grapes in Heaton Norris, which me and Craig used to go into, but it obviously we didn't film it there. It was not based on there, but we used to go drinking in there. So it's quite an oldie sort of pub. The landlord there tells people that it was filmed in the Grapes and more, so just to get and gets more customers in. And he's there saying, oh, yeah, old Tommy used to sit in, so one of my friends was telling me, oh, yeah, old Tommy used to sit in that corner there. And it's been knocked about the pub a little bit, but they used, so he tells them all that it was. Fair play to it.
I'll go in.
Yeah.
Put in a uniform.
Yeah. But it is that for sure. I think it is that thing where, and in Early Doors and in Porridge, there's no great aspiration there. You know, there's no, in Early Doors, nobody's kind of, everyone's quite happy being in there. You know, there are things going in the life that are not so great about, but everybody's quite, you know, there's not a lot of we've got to get out of this place kind of shit going on.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the thing you said, I imagine you say it when you're running your workshops, masterclasses, about then put that thing of having, wanting to be with those characters, looking forward to when those characters come on.
Yeah.
Because I know, when I delivered a sitcom with a friend recently, I think it was very funny and people, there was very lot of feedback, but it was that thing about, I don't know if I want to return to see all these people. So there's certain things that are really strong, and it's that thing you've got to go in with a tooth comb. I mean, do you sit down and think about the characters before you start writing the script? So, you know, do you know the backstory of any of the characters as such?
We kind of know them anyway. So it's not like, you know, it's not like, we don't say, oh, well, I imagine that Eddie and Joan met when they were at school, or I don't know. We don't do it in that so much, but we kind of, you've seen, you know, everybody sort of knows a couple who are, or people that are, I mean, I love them too, because I just think they're the happiest people in there. I mean, they're madly in love with each other. They kind of, they just breeze through life. And they're oblivious to what any of the shit that's going on or anything that's going on. I think it's really, really important. And I do say this when I'm doing these workshops, is that, you know, when you were a kid and you were writing an essay and they always say, well, plan it out first, make sure you do your introduction, your middle, your conclusion and all that. But I'm not sure they get enough time in exams to do that. But that's it. More and more as time's gone on. I mean, this last thing that me and Craig have written, this play that we've written, we spent months just planning it out, because we kind of know that, and that sounds, without sounding arrogant, we kind of know that we can do the comedy. So we know
How arrogant?
Very, it is arrogant. Do you think so? But we know we can make it the best comedy ever. So without sounding too arrogant. But it's about getting, like, the story right and getting the characters, you know, giving them more than making more than just one dimensional, making them three dimensional characters. That actually was one of the became a bit more difficult with the cops, because which is why we would have done more, I think, in learning a bit more about their backstory, because it becomes one of those things where people go, oh, right, what have the cops been up to this time? So you're sort of backing yourself into a corner, because there's only so much, you know, chicanery, whatever it is, that the cops can have been up to. Chicanery. Is that the right word?
More or less.
Is that such a word?
Definitely such a word, yeah.
It is such, I'm not sure that applies to that. But, yeah. No.
You know what my favourite scene was in Early Doors?
It was the one with me in, obviously.
You were in it, funnily enough. You were in it. You were very incidental.
In the background.
it was the scene where you and, you know, Joe and Duffy are talking to Jimmy McAvoy's character about his DJ. The whole thing about it starts about advice. There's obviously advice about girlfriends, but then talking about how you know, and then and you know the Craig's line about, you know, that it's all right for fat boy Slim, they're all out of their heads before he starts. I've got to get them dancing when they're full from the buffet. And they go through the, you know, humanly let the gatto settle. Yeah. That's my favourite sequence.
Really? Why?
The whole thing. I mean, you know, that's not to say, along with about 80 other favourite
Why? Why is that your favourite sequence? Oh, God, I'm interested to know.
Comedy just made me laugh a lot.
Yeah.
I suppose the delusion of Joe to some extent. Yeah. You know, this commitment to this was a really good, this was the way to do it.
Yeah.
It's obvious. And the way, and you know, the way you all play it and the way James plays it, just with enough of, all right, okay.
Yeah.
Pictures it perfectly. Like, you know, I'm going to let you say this. I think it's a load of rubbish, but I'm going to let you say this. Yeah. So, in terms of why, it just made me.
It's funny how we could, because I do remember that. I remember I was writing that and thinking all those things about, you know, it's, I mean, Peter Kay did a whole thing about it, I seem to remember. Didn't he think about, you know, the kids sliding on the floor, which is very funny. Yeah. Really funny. Yeah. I think from his point of view, though, it was like, this is what you've got to do. You know, you've got to kind of look the human, you know, come on, Eileen, you know, I am sailing New York. You know,
all like, circle in the middle,
all forms. So he, you know, but my favorite, but and at the end when he says, and you know, how come you don't do the DJ anymore? I don't know. We're just kind of dried up.
And so a brilliant payoff when he got to do one at the end of the sentence.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you've ruined it, you have. The guy keeps shouting things out. He's trying to do that thing, isn't it?
Oh, he's trying to do
too tight to mention thing or whatever.
But you
ruined that now.
Yeah. and he's DJ, but this guy, the pub I go into, this Fletcher Moss, he probably will listen to this actually. But the landlord there, he when he does the pub quiz, he does that, his microphone voice. When he's on there, you go, all right, Matthew, all right, Phil, for quiz, I'll put your money in, Question number one, what is the capital? And it's all that, you know what I mean? And that's what, it's great, because Craig is teaching you, okay, we all having a good time. Just really. Again, it's just, I sometimes wonder to myself, and I just think, because, you know, you do get some people from, we're about class, aren't we? We're British. We kind of always have been, really. I mean, you know, it still goes on. Yeah. Still an awareness of what class you're in. But, you know, I think, oh, you know, I wonder if people who are sort of middle class and upper class understand this and get this. And to be honest with you, lots of them do. But I'm sure, unfortunately for us, the commissioners, but I'm sure that people would have no sense of what this world is, you know, they're not getting, you know, the buffet will be open in 5 minutes and all that. Don't start queuing yet. And you know, Tommy in the toilet are getting away from just those things that are sort of peculiar.
That Lorraine's character says, is it something like the friends you've got? They've got six people coming around for dinner. So many trays.
I mean, do you think you'll have enough trays, Joe? No, we can't have it on trays. We've got to sit at the table. And we're not without a telly on. What? No telly on? Yeah.
But this is how we grow up. You go around, not mm-hmm. in our house particularly, but certainly you go around to people's houses and the TV was just on. Wasn't it? Just,
yeah. Yeah.
You'd watch it.
Yeah. You sat down in front of the telly. A mate of mine used to lie on the floor. His mum would bring his, it's like, you almost expect to see the dog sat at the table because he used to lie on the floor mm-hmm. on his stomach. His mum would bring his tea in, put it in front of him, a knife, and he'd be lay on the floor eating his tea, watching with his head up, just watching the telly.
Yeah.
You know, just bizarre.
I'm sure I've done that as well. I must have.
Yeah. I've done it when I, you know, although my parents were a bit like, no, you know, you need to. But not Saturday, I think would be the day where we'd be allowed to have trays and have it on our knee.
You know. Yeah, do you know the daftest idea I was told by someone? Just some guy I spoke to. Only time I met him, and he said, "Oh, if it came back though, you couldn't be in it, could you? Because you'd be too old now to be police. So you'd have to be your sons and become police."
I
do.
I mean, the thing is that when we did it, when we did the live show, you know, let's face it, you know, they would. You know, you would be the oldest coppers in town.
Yeah, it would be, yeah.
But nobody's watching that. Anybody's watching that thinking, no. Well, I used to like this, but I don't believe that they'd be in the police force now. If you wait, then we're not doing the job properly. Well,
Jack Warner was 82 when he was still at the end of the time, played Dixon Dot Green. So
yeah, you know.
There you go.
That covers that for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. People don't want change anyway. I mean, the only allowance we made was to put a canopy on so they could smoke outside.
That was it.
That was the only thing that had changed, I think, in the whole updated mobile phones.
Yeah, that was it, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's all good stuff.
Yeah. But so just
to let you ask a question, eh, Ben?
The only thing I want to cover at this point is, so obviously, Phil and Nige, yourself and Peter, were, as we mentioned at the start, kind of the outsiders in the back room. Did you and Peter like go for drinks, just the two of you, like very method wise? Did you do anything like that, or was it just let's all get pissed together?
Sorry to disappoint the method fans, but no, we went for drinks, but that would be with the group. You're asking, did we say to each other, let's go for a drink, and so we really get the feel of. Mm-hmm. And we're two people together. I'm afraid we didn't do that. We tried to pull it off. I mean, actors have different methods, and I respect whatever different people do.
Yeah.
But that's, I don't think that's the, I don't know.
But to be honest, in that group, you wouldn't have been allowed to anyway, would you? Mm. Everyone would say, what's up with you two? Why are you two seen off? You come up with us? No, you wouldn't have been. Anyway, it was such a, you know, and I know everybody says that, and I know people listening think, oh, that's probably all bullshit, that, but genuinely it's not. At that, you know, everybody was really tight together. Everybody, you know, we all got on, everyone out for drinks together. It was just great fun. Great fun. And I've said this before, and I know it probably sounds a bit wanky, really, but I think somehow you can sense that when you're watching it as well, that everybody, because I don't know, I think it translates. Don't ask me how, but I think it does.
So the only exception then was Craig Cash's co-writer, who was also in it. He's a monster.
Yeah, yeah. Fortunately, he just made a lot of cups of teas and just let Craig write it all. So basically,
I remember banging on the fist on his table so many times and saying, yeah. If you do it like that again, you're out. Stop destroying my vision. That was the other thing, you know.
Yeah. Who's in my line of
It was. But we got on. But the thing was, we see each other from time to me and Peter, and we did get on very, very easily and very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was never any issue about anything. We got this great script and we just got on with it. Best one was when I, in the second series, when I'm first, we roll in the joint, which I kept on being an innocent, Craig and Phil had to quickly write a little mon- there's a monologue that almost a monologue that Peter has, that Nige has, about a woman in a queue in a post office or something.
Yeah, like, it's just a kind of,
and that was just done. And Peter White, to his credit, a very quick study, just learned it, and just to give the time to roll this.
Just enough time. Yeah, because there wasn't enough time for you to roll the joint, wasn't there? So we were like, right, okay, we need to write. So we just did about the queue in the post office, and I mean, it's quite a lot of old people there queuing for the pensions, and the smell's awful. And it's just a kind of but it was just the kind of random thing for him to go on. And
credit bits of instant writing, and credit for a very quick study. That, it's good, yeah, good,
great. Well, we've reached the 4 o'clock mark, so thank you very much, James. And like I say, I'll convince you in the new year to come on again, because there's about 4 or 5 things I'll get told off for if I don't bring up at some point.
So, I bet the laughs one of them, isn't it?
I would hate to say. But thank you very much. Thanks again, Phil.
Brilliant.
Thanks for listening. Remember to like, subscribe, tell your friends, because as we know, with Early Doors itself, it is a very word of mouth over the last 20 years. So I'm sure the podcast will go the same way. And we'll see you next time for an episode review.
Brilliant. All right. Cheers. Thanks, James. See you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Nice one.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.